I can't tell the difference between my waking life and dreams. It must be very difficult. The voices in your head. There's chaos in you. Embrace it.
Bonus episode.
There's already like 7 million podcasts talking about pop culture and all that. Makes us happy like shooting at a womp rat, but it's all been done before. We don't want to be a copycat. We're the leftovers picking up the scraps dropped by the cool kids.
It's a trap.
Good at toss it, good at taste it. Do we love it? Hey, let's face it. Can't erase it. Let's embrace the Tupperware party. Subculture spill over like a vulture. Carry over counterculture. Push over pop culture.
Leftovers.
And with the uncool kids, what's to say has already been said.
Leftovers.
Pretty sure that the only talent is the band that's singing this. Pop culture leftovers.
WandaVision.
Hello, this is Randall Park, and you are listening to Pop Culture Leftovers.
WandaVision.
Hey, welcome to a bonus episode of Pop Culture Leftovers. I'm Brian.
I'm Jake.
And we're the leftovers. Yeah, that's how we do it. Jake, what's going on? Dude, I'm letting everybody know right off the top of the show, I've been sick all week. It started Sunday night, Jake. Went into Monday morning, and I thought I was okay on Monday. I was like, I don't feel great, but I'm all right. Went about and did my day like I usually do. And by fucking Monday night, I was fucked up. I've been fucked up all week. I started to finally feel somewhat better today. And, gonna do my best on this Moon Knight episode to talk about this one with our guest. But man, it's been a rough week for me. I've been sick.
Yeah, that's rough. I've had that happen before too. It's like, oh, I feel better now. And you go about and do all your shit. And it's like, you made it worse by doing all that activity.
Exactly. Yeah. You're just breaking down your immune system, you dumb fuck. That's what I did. All right. We are there to talk with us on this episode about the first episode of Moon Knight. We are joined by Neil Thalander from Smorgasbord.
Howdy.
What's up, dude? It's been a while. Good to have you back.
It has been a while. It's always good to talk to you guys, and especially about Moon Knight.
Yeah. And we are also joined by Shiftin' Tristan Brown. Welcome back, Shiftin' Tristan.
Thanks for having me. I'm very excited to talk about this one.
Absolutely. And we got another person. This is a fucking roundtable, Jake. We got Joe Stark from Starkcast.
Hey, excited to be here.
Neil, what are you giggling about over there? I know. It's the trademark. Hey, happy to be here from Joe Stark. Before we jump into the Moon Knight portion of the episode, we do have a contest. I have to go over it this week. It is for The Contractor, starring Chris Pine, is now in theaters and available on digital and on demand. When a discharged elite special forces sergeant is desperate to provide for his family, he contracts with private military force and unravels a deep conspiracy, sending him on the run for his life. Buy or rent The Contractor and watch it today. It's rated R from Paramount Pictures, and we've got 5 digital copies, and you can get one of these digital copies. All you have to do is I'm going to be putting out a Facebook post on Facebook and a tweet on Twitter, and all you have to do is retweet or share the post, take a screenshot, send it to me at contest@popcultureleftovers.com with the title The Contractor. And next week's episode, I'll go over the winners for The Contractor digital prizes, and you'll win a copy of that movie. That's awesome. Chris Pine movie. There you go.
Yeah, that is awesome. I can't wait to see that one.
Yeah. And, enter the contest for The Contractor. Again, it's contest@popcultureleftovers.com. That's where you can send the entry. All right, guys, let's jump in to Moon Knight episode 1. I saw this online. If you go to Disney Plus and you look at it in the order of the timeline, this one's showing up after Hawkeye. So this has taken place. This is what's wild about this is that the MCU project that is taking place the furthest in the MCU timeline feels like it's the most least connected of any MCU project that we've seen come before it.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, they could have placed this anywhere and you would have never known just from the content of this episode.
Honestly, like any MCU kind of, I guess like any MCU connections that we can form is in my opinion, I don't know, for everything I've picked up, unless you guys picked up on something else, is just a theory at this point. Because this feels so disconnected. I mean, I guess you could try to make connections to maybe the Eternals because of the, you know, going way back in time and stuff and with the gods and Egypt and all this stuff. But honestly, as far as just like straight MCU Easter eggs, I didn't see any unless they were Moon Knight Easter eggs.
No, there weren't any, I don't think. And I think that kind
That's
of
a good
plays
thing.
Plays into what the show is about, which is a, you know, his isolation as a person dealing with all these different personalities and all these unexpected events that pop up. It really kind of helps set this character up to be on his own as he is as a comic book character.
Yeah. No, I like it, man. It's kind of like. Oh, actually, hold on. Let me ask this question. Do you think by the end of, once we get all six episodes, do you think by the end of this, we're going to have his introduction into the proper MCU, or do you think it's going to end with Mark Spector, Moon Knight, basically just kind of being set up for a season two? Or I honestly think that there's got to be a post-credit scene that's going to lead into some sort of like Blade Midnight Suns kind of like team up at the end of this.
Yeah.
I definitely think there's going to be some connective tissue established by the end of the season. I'm not sure how strong they're going to go into it because I don't know if they know exactly where they want to go yet with the character, but I think they're going to establish him in the world as a whole at some point during these six episodes.
Yeah, it's not like I'm saying like he's going to be visited by Nick Fury at the end of this thing.
Right.
But I think, you know, what did we have in at the end of the Eternals in the post-credit scene, you know, the Black Knight is we're getting the Black Knight set up, and I think that's
and Blade.
Yeah, I mean, well, with Blade, with when we got the Blade voiceover, like this guy's been hearing voices in his head from Khonshu. I mean, at the end of this, he might think he's hearing another voice and freaking out. And in all honesty, we like see a shot of Mahershala Ali there, you know,
that'd be sweet.
Which I think would be smart. In a couple of ways. Number one, who knows when, like, this Blade thing, I don't even know if it started to film yet. We've been getting announcements and it's like, we're so far off from Blade and it feels like Kevin Feige, you know, announced this thing like 2 years ago. And,
I also think we're gonna get some reference to Werewolf by Night, which is gonna be that one shot in October that's coming out.
Yeah.
Because they are actually connected. I mean, that Moon Knight's origin in the comics was hunting down Werewolf by Night. So I would imagine they're going to try and establish that relationship at least a little bit in the show.
Yeah, that'll be interesting. I just think it would be smart of them to do something with Blade and actually let us see Blade, what he looks like. I think it would be like that would be, you know, like you get your Mandalorian huge reveals, you know. It's like, oh, my God, Luke Skywalker showing up. Like this would be like, you know, they're kind of like Luke Skywalker showing up, not to that massive fucking fanboy extent, but still it's Blade, you know? And, I think that they need to do something with Blade leading up before we get that movie. And I think it'd be perfect for him to show up in a post-credit scene from Moon Knight.
Sure.
Yeah, I love that idea. This is their jumping off series to start introducing that Marvel horror stuff. Like, I think we're going to get some Easter eggs for the rest of the MCU at large as this series goes on. But, yeah, I think they left it unconnected at this starting point for a reason. because I feel like this is the starting point for this, you know, different genre of storytelling that we really haven't gotten out of the MCU to date.
Yeah, Jake. Yeah,
Brian kind of touched on that with bringing up the possible Midnight Suns arc, like coming after this, and I really do think that's kind of a perfect comic book storyline to put all these characters in, like your Moon Knights and your Blades and your Werewolf by Nights. And I hadn't even thought about what Neil said. I think that's actually brilliant because Werewolf by Night is just so connected to the character, especially in those first few issues. That would be really cool if somehow Moon Knight was hunting him down.
Yeah.
Do we know if that's going to be live action or animated?
It's live action.
I think it's live action.
Okay.
Yeah, it has a lead actor already. It's no one I recognized.
Interesting. Okay.
Who's directing it? Isn't it like Robert Rodriguez or somebody?
No.
Please no.
Oh, man, you're going to have to make me get on the Google. The only thing that makes me doubt the Moon Knight connection there is it's just one episode. And much like the first episode of Moon Knight kind of stuck in its own bubble so it could introduce the character, it might be weird for just one episode of Werewolf by Night to kind of be distracted by Moon Knight. That's the only thing that kind of gives me doubt in that scenario.
Well, that makes sense, yeah.
Isn't it Giacchino that's doing it? The composer?
That is correct.
That's right.
Yeah,
that'll be good. That'll be really good. This episode one, was titled The Goldfish Problem. Moon Knight, the series on Disney Plus, is created by Jeremy Slater. He's, this guy's been all around, good and bad. It depends on what you've seen from Jeremy Slater. He's worked on Fantastic Four, the one from 2015, the Trank film. But he also did, he's also worked on the Exorcist series. He's also worked on the Umbrella Academy series on Netflix. So it's like, you know, it doesn't mean that this particular guy doesn't have a vision, doesn't have a story, just because he worked on the Fantastic Four. He serves as head writer on this with Mohamed Diab leading the directing team. I think Mohamed Diab, I think he's directing four episodes, and the other two episodes are like a combo of directors, I believe. Oscar Isaac, of course, is starring as Mark Spector Moon Knight, a mercenary who has dissociative identity disorder. We've also got May Calamwi, Kareem El-Hakim, F. Murray Abraham, and Ethan Hawke starring in this. F. Murray Abraham is the voice of Khonshu. And then Ethan Hawke, of course, is Arthur Harrow. And I want to jump into our breakdown. Do you guys want to rate this one first, or do you want to save the rating to the end? I'm going to ask you guys.
I like to rate first.
Okay. Yeah, we'll rate this one first. Here's our rating system if this is your first time listening.
The rating system is simple. If the leftovers don't like something, they toss it. If they do like something, they suggest you taste it. And if it's brilliant, it gets a Tupperware rating. If all the leftovers love it, then it gets the pinnacle of success, a Tupperware party.
I'm going to start with Tristan. What do you think of Moon Knight? And I don't want us to actually, I want us to rate it and talk about it, but I don't... Yeah, go ahead. No. Spoilers from here on out. Go for it.
Yeah. You know what? Moon Knight was a character that I'm not too familiar with, despite my heavy affinity for Marvel Comics. It's just a character that I never really got too much into. And I wanted to go into this as blind as possible. I didn't read up on anything or any, you know, try to go in there with any expectations, especially since I know there's various iterations of the character. But overall, I have to say that I was really, really impressed by this first episode. I got a lot of Memento vibes. It reminded me a very cinematic approach to TV series. It looked like it was shot or excerpts of a movie as opposed to a television pilot. And, you know, I thought the score was fantastic, as well as the soundtrack. I can see they put some money into that as well. I actually was really impressed by the director, Mohamed Diab. I tweeted about him, and he retweeted me right after.
Oh, awesome.
Which was really fun to see.
What did you tweet him?
Yeah, and I just basically just – this is right after the episode dropped, and I just said something like, I think that, you know, we're witnessing a, you know, an emerging great director or something like that. And, yeah, he – retweeted it, and And yeah, I thought that the editing, the frame rate, the...
We're losing you, Tristan.
And they did a really good job. Oh, shit. What about now?
You're good now. Am You're I good back? Now. Yeah, go for it.
Okay. Yeah, I was just saying that, you know, I felt that it did a really good job of making us give a shit about a character that we spent so little time with. I felt that Oscar Isaac was superb in the role as far as what he's been given so thus far. I'm really intrigued to see what Ethan Hawke is going to bring to the character as well. It's just a very different start to an MCU show, and I'm here for it. So, yeah, it was definitely a Tupperware for me for the first episode.
Very cool. Yeah, Jake, what did you think?
Yeah, man, I absolutely loved it. Moon Knight's not like the character I have the most knowledge about, but I'm also not completely blank. Like, I've read a lot of comics with Moon Knight in them. I never much read his solo series too often, but he showed up in a lot of the comics I read. You know, I read a lot of Daredevil, I read a lot of Spider-Man, and he was always showing up, and his arcs were always really, really cool. But yeah, this show really blew me away. Like, I expected it to be good, but the production level was actually way more than I could have hoped. The car chase scene just looked so nice. The sound editing with some of the, oh man, this sounded so good on the speakers. And yeah, I thought the performances were wonderful. I've never seen Oscar Isaac play such like a hapless geek character. And I thought that was really interesting. At first it was like, I don't know if I'm buying this or not. And then like 10 minutes in, I thought it was just absolutely wonderful. I thought Ethan Hawke was like deliciously evil and really was like eating up his role. I couldn't believe the stuff going on with his character. Yeah, I thought it was kind of a perfect first episode. I thought it was really smart to hold out on showing us Moon Knight and doing it the way they did. I can imagine people not familiar with this, like ready to instantly watch that second episode the second it comes out. Like, I know I will be, but yeah, I can't wait to break this down. This was so fucking awesome.
Yeah, I think Tristan kind of compared it to Memento. They're saying online, like a lot of people have been saying, like it's Indiana Jones meets Fight Club.
I love that. Some of the edits did remind me of Fight Club. Like when you were seeing him miss time, the way like in Fight Club, David Fincher actually was kicking the camera to achieve those shots. And you kind of felt some of that here. Like you could see the whole reel like shaking on your TV.
Yeah, yeah. I'll go ahead and rate it next. I've seen it three times. I've seen the episode three times, and I think I like it a little bit more each time that I watch it. I'm going to settle at a high taste it. And the reason I'm settling it, I feel like this first episode, I definitely want to watch the next episode, but I do have a problem with these Disney Plus series as far as just giving us enough. I feel like they don't always give us enough, and I didn't feel like I got enough here. I got enough to keep me intrigued and to keep me watching. Part of me is on the fence about, like, am I going to watch this every week, or am I just going to just binge it when it's all done? But I think I am going to watch it for the week to week kind of like water cooler discussion that I can have with people as each episode comes out. It made me just want to see more Mark Spector. And I think we're going to definitely get that. I really do. I think we're getting the Mark Spector stuff. I don't, the reason it's not getting the Tupperware is because I don't believe from everything that we've like heard about how like this is going to be, you know, kind of like violent. I don't think that they're pushing the PG-13 violence as much as they want us to think that they're going to be pushing it in this series. Just from what I've seen. And I mean, you talk about PG-13 violence that we've seen this year. I think the Batman pushed it very, very far. And I just don't think this show is like pushing it that far. When we do get blood, it's basically they're cutting away and we're seeing it. We're not seeing like how it's all happening. It's just, and I know it's very early for me to say this, but I don't think that this show is going to be as, I thought it was going to be closer to TVMA than it was to this TV 14 that we're getting. And it's not. That's like, other than that, I think the show is really good. I just don't think this one episode was enough. But I thought it was fantastic. I think it's really good. And maybe my opinion overall will change when all six episodes are out. Maybe I'll just do a complete flip and be like, okay, that first episode is just, I mean, once it's all as a collective, I absolutely love it. But I did enjoy it quite a bit, and I do like the Egyptian mythology that they're bringing into this. And I mean, it's a lot of Egyptian mythology that we've seen in other Hollywood studio productions and movies, as well as like a lot of stuff that I'd seen in American Gods, which I really appreciated. I think Ethan Hawke's doing a great job. I think Oscar Isaac's fantastic so far. It was funnier than I thought it was actually going to be. That surprised me. The jokes, it actually surprised me. And I thought that they were pretty good. It's a high tasted right now, but that could definitely change. And I think I'm probably going to be the only high tasted on this episode, to be quite honest with you.
I agree with you about the point of the violence. I mean, maybe in the next couple episodes when we see more Mark Spector, it'll lean more that way. But I tend to lean towards what you're thinking, that it's really not going to push the boundaries of the violence. I think so far, Falcon and the Winter Soldier is the most violent thing the MCU has given us.
Yeah. I guess that is kind of a sticking point with me. Like, that's one of the things that I felt like they kind of promised in this. And I don't think even by Mark Spector, they're going to deliver. I don't think they're going to deliver. I think once we get to the Mark Spector stuff, it'll be more kind of like action. Now we're getting more into like the Indiana Jones, of it all, because in this episode, like when we cut back to what Steven is seeing, it looks like every scene in a Indiana Jones movie is what we're left with. Like, you know what I mean? It's like we got up, went to the bathroom and came back and Indiana Jones has just kicked everybody's ass. And we're like, how did he do it? You know, that's what it felt. I feel like that once we get to the Mark Spector stuff, it's not going to be like fucking like bloody knuckles and you know, fucking just beating people into a bloody pulp, which I thought we were going to get a little bit more. I thought they were going to lean more towards that direction in this series. I don't think they are going to do that. Am I saying it's a bait and switch? Kind of, but I still enjoy the series, and I think that the story is really, really good so far, and it asks a lot of questions. So I really like that. But I was hoping that they would push the violence a little bit. But they're still giving us a great story, great direction. And I did love the soundtrack and everything in the episode. Joe, what did you think about Moon Knight?
Yeah, I've also seen this one three times. And my rating went up every time I watched it as well. The first time I watched it, I think I was just expecting to see more Mark Spector, more Moon Knight. And I'd been on a tear reading lots of different Moon Knight comics from lots of different creators. And the one thing I noticed in my quest to read all this different Moon Knight is it seems like every time there's a new writer on the character, there's a bunch of shit retconned and changed. So, so I didn't have any hard expectations going into this of, oh, I want to see this storyline. And I think that did help, but definitely the first time I watched it, you know, I was a little bit underwhelmed, but then by the second time I watched it, I think I picked up more on what they were doing in this episode. And for me, this is a Tupperware episode. The first time I watched it, it was more in the high taste it realm. But then after the second time I watched it and kind of did some more deep thinking on it, it really clicked with me. And I think it was a smart narrative choice to start and keep us with Steven for the duration of the pilot episode, because he, like us, has no clue what's going on when he's not in charge of his body. And in that first time I watched it, you know, when it would cut away and I'd be like, well, I wanted this intense violence that Kevin Feige went out of his way to more or less tell us to expect in this. And we didn't see it. But like Steven, he didn't see it either. He's just kind of, you know, and I love the way they did that camera work with it, like almost like a CD skipping or something like that, you know, yeah. And then goes in and he's just standing there with blood on his hands. Like, what the fuck happened? The opening scene in this might be one of the most disturbing things I think we've ever seen in the MCU to date. The whole thing with just him, the thought of somebody consciously putting broken glass in their shoes and then putting them on and going for a walk is just horrifying, just absolutely horrifying. And kudos to the Folio work on that, because every time he took a step, you could hear that
glass
grinding.
Crunching.
Yes, and it was just fucking disturbing. Oh,
so visceral.
I've got a question before we go. I want to hear the rest of like what you have to say, Joe. But I got a question about that scene. Is it what was it symbolizing here? I know it's like, is it symbolizing how many like religious leaders are, you know, they choose this path and that path is there's a lot of like pain and suffering that they need to endure as a leader to go down this path. Is it symbolism of that? Or for me, when I watched it, there's times where I feel like it's that. And then there's times where I feel like it's almost, it reminds me of a fire walk, you know, like, I don't like
what I
go for it. Cause I really had a hard time with that.
What I got from it was that this guy really fucking believes what he's preaching, and that he's really into whatever his belief system is, and that he's not just a guy that's trying to calm people to the point where he's actually willing to endure suffering on behalf of his beliefs as well.
Yeah, I mean,
like self-flagellation in the name of faith.
Exactly. Self-flagellation is a big part of like hardcore religious extremists, in order to kind of prove to themselves that they are on the right path, that they, you know, like the hair shirts or the whipping that you get from like really like create like deeply religious Christians. You know, it's kind of that whole, my body is a temple, but that temple's dedicated to this God, and they're willing to put themselves through all sorts of torment in order to prove to their God that they are in charge of their own body. Like, you know,
yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, I mean, he is this religious cult leader who is basically, I think he wants to be the avatar of the Egyptian goddess Amit, and who he sees that he's there to bring Amit to into the world to heal the world. And so to heal the world, he's taking on the pain and suffering of the world, you know, just kind of like, even if you take it to Christianity and it's like, you know, Jesus died for all of us. And this is kind of like him taking on the pain for the world while Amit is the one who's going to heal the world.
Uh-huh.
I don't know. There's a lot going on in that scene, you know?
Yeah. It's a hell of a character introduction. I mean,
yeah,
brilliant. In this new brand new character.
That was Ethan Hawke's idea. He worked. He worked with Oscar Isaac to conceive this character, and he wanted to perform inverse actions or emotions to him, and saw Harrow as a mix between a monk and a doctor. He was inspired by performances. He was inspired. His performance was inspired by cult leader David Koresh. This is
from Waco. Yeah,
psychiatrist Carl Jung, communist dictator Fidel Castro, the Dalai Lama, writer Leo Tolstoy, Pentecostal televangelist Jimmy Swaggart, Nazi officer and Dr. Joseph Mengele, and the One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest character Nurse Ratched.
Oh my God!
as well as questioning if Apple co-founder Steve Jobs was a bad guy, and that's what I saw. That's crazy. Go ahead, Joe. I wanted to put that question out there since we were talking about that scene.
No, that's great. I mean, but yeah, I mean, what a disturbing way to start a show. I mean, it really sets a tone, because we've never seen anything. You know, a lot of these MCU movies are pretty lighthearted. And it's cool to see him go darker, but I felt like this was some of the just darkest shit that we've seen yet. But yeah. I mean, I you know, I liked it. It really elicited an emotion from the start. I thought the performances in this were all really good. Oscar Isaac created a really endearing character in Stephen Grant. We only got a taste of Mark Spector there at the end. I really liked what I saw, and I look forward to seeing that more. And especially once it really gets going and we get to see more of that back and forth in seeing Oscar Isaac do both of these wildly different characters, you know, seemingly switching on and off. Ethan Hawke, man, with just a quietly menacing portrayal of Arthur Harrow, who really in the comics isn't like just he's kind of a one-off,
he's in
not even
one issue.
It's like one issue, right? So it's pretty cool that what they're doing with this, and that they got such a high caliber actor, and he's taking it so seriously. Really look forward to see what more we're going to get out of Ethan Hawke in this. F. Murray Abraham as the voice of Khonshu was fucking fantastic. I loved how many times it played off as humorous.
Yeah.
Like lots of laugh out loud moments. My favorite was, did he just throw the gun? Fantastic.
It reminded me, the voice kind of reminded me of like the old Shazam show where he would talk, where, you know, Captain Marvel would talk to the elders. And it, I don't know if you guys have ever watched that. It was on DC Universe for a while.
Yeah, I never saw it, but I remember Vitaly talking about it a lot.
Yeah, it's just the voice really sounded like the elders from that old Shazam show from the 70s.
Perfect. I saw lots of people online making comparisons to Venom also. And I mean, I can kind of see that. You know, it's a deep voice playing in somebody's head that comes off humorous. I think some of my favorite parts in this were that cupcake truck chase scene. The music playing Wham, the old lady getting the finger mushing. I mean, everything about it was so great. All the way up to the ending with the guys getting just smushed by the logs. I mean, fucking unreal. And I liked the questions that this left me with at the end of the episode. You know, they teased us with that scarab a lot, but we have no idea what the significance of it is other than the bad guy wants it back really bad.
I want to talk about that because I do have some theories on what the scarab is.
But I mean, otherwise, like I loved this first episode. I loved how intricately layered it was and how I really had to think about it a lot. And then the more I thought about it, the more I liked it. And I like it when writing in a show can do that sort of trick to me. So, yeah, this is a really strong start for me, and I can't wait to see where we're going to get with the rest of it.
Yeah, it started off as a taste it for me, and it went up as high as a high taste it. And I think it does. It is one of those, especially when you're dealing with a character who's, you know, suffering from DID, that maybe you need a couple watches because there's a lot going on in this episode. You know, we're getting.
Do you guys believe that we're going to see episode one, but from Mark's perspective?
Yes.
Oh, that'd be cool.
I don't.
It'd be cool to at least see flashes of it.
I don't. I mean,
because there was a lot of missing time there from Thursday night to, you know, whatever time he got hit with the logs.
Yeah.
What I think is going to happen, I mean, this is just my own personal belief, like kind of what I want to see is like the first four episodes will be each from a different character's perspective, like a different personality's perspective. And then the final two will kind of be bringing everything together in a summation. Maybe not like the exact episode one from Mark's perspective, but like flashes of that along with some other stuff, like backstory and moving the plot forward. But I do think that they're going to devote some time to flesh out each personality in a way that will make them each compelling on their own, but also even better when they get brought together and we see them all in kind of not necessarily interact, but deal with each other existing.
I'm thinking that the first two episodes will be Steven, and then flashes of Mark, and then I'm thinking the next two after that will probably be a struggle between Mark and Steven with more Mark showing up. Because with them saying that it's like, you know, it's Fight Club meets Indiana Jones, I do think that we're gonna get at least two episodes that are going to be very action heavy with Mark, And I am with you that I do think that the last two episodes are going to be like the summation of everything in this series.
And I do think that they're going to, they do want to flesh out both Mark and also Jake Lockley. And we've seen the promo images of Mr. Knight, which is another kind of semi-personality that he puts on in order to deal with law enforcement. So I do think we're going to get some time devoted to actually showcase these characters and show the audience who each of them is individually. And it'll give us a great – I mean, Oscar Isaac is so fucking fantastic of an actor that he can play each of these characters so differently, yet make them have kind of a through line.
As far as flashing back and seeing Mark in the first episode, though, I don't really think there's any meat there. I mean, we kind of really get the gist of what Mark did during those flashes. It's not like it was really any exposition. It was all just, you know, the part of the Universal Studios ride where everyone has the big action scene. I don't think there's really any character development that we need to go back and see those scenes from.
Now, the big thing I want to see is how he got the scarab. Like, what was happening in that castle or whatever. It's specifically, like, what was this exchange going down?
Where you waved to the guard?
Oh, that was so funny. And I love how the other guard hits him when he waves back, like, what are you doing? Shoot at him.
Joe, so it's a Tupperware for you. Neil, what did you think?
Yeah, I am very familiar with Moon Knight. He's my second favorite Marvel character after Deadpool. I've read quite a few of the runs. I'm not like, you know, a scholar or anything, but I really, really love this character. And I thought that they did a fantastic job of just dropping us in this world with a narrator that is just as clueless as we are. I mean, I'm going to Tupperware this first episode just because it really established this guy's issues and just how of a weird existence he has. As everybody said, I loved the flashing through the action sequences, the technique, just seeing Oscar Isaac, you know, go from one extreme to like being completely clueless about what's actually happening to him and like trying to deal with the repercussions of his alters like actions was great. I love the steak scene where he's at that restaurant and he has a vegan ordering a steak, not knowing how to fucking order a steak. and I hear that Muhammad Diab had to actually fight to keep that scene in.
Yeah,
and it's such a beautiful character moment for Stephen Grant to really see his internal struggles and just, you know, everything's breaking down for him constantly.
We said basically Muhammad Diab is saying like that scene needs to be in this episode because we need to show how hard this is for him because he can't even start up relationships, you know, and that's one of the things that really connects us with characters is like, you know, how other people connect with them. And when we can't see other people connecting with our main character, we have empathy for him. Like in this episode, we see, him talking to like two people really like that are supposed to be close to him, his mother, who he's talking through voicemail. And then
I don't think she exists.
And then number two, he's talking to the living statue.
Yeah.
The one person that
can't respond.
Yeah, and everybody else, everybody else in his life that he's never had, the woman that at work, his boss that treats him like shit, and then the one like glimmer of hope is he's got this date coming up, and then that's been stripped away from him because he spent 2 days in Germany getting the scarab and lost all time, and so it's
waking up in the Swiss Alps.
Yeah, it's really fucking sad.
Well, how rude is that Mark sets that date and then makes him miss it?
My question is, Mark doesn't speak in a British accent. So when he starts talking in a British accent to her, why doesn't she call him out on that?
I'm wondering if maybe it was Jake Lockley who set up that date, and they're going to make Jake Lockley British as well.
Okay. Yeah, that would make sense, because I was a little confused about that. Like, why, you know, I would
think... Or Mark is aware of everything, and he knew that he wanted to get some and put on a fake accent, like Oscar Isaac is doing.
But see, that's one reason why I definitely want to see some things from Mark's perspective, because I also want to see how is he intertwining into Steven's life and how...
Yeah.
Yeah, because he obviously seems to be, like, in charge enough to where he's putting the room back in order before he goes to bed. He's fixing the sand, putting the leash on, putting tape on the door.
Yeah, it seems like every personality, the way they're establishing it, is kind of at least subconsciously aware of the others. But Mark seems to be more actively aware of the other personalities. Which makes sense, you know, considering the comics where Mark is the dominant personality, and is at least knows that he's got some issues.
Well, I think
Mark's already picked out who the dumbest one is between all the different personalities. So Mark is definitely aware more so than everyone else.
I think what's happened is the Mark and Khonshu have like this relationship, and I think that Mark at first created Stephen Grant as a cover, just like a, you know, like that's, you know, that's, he's going to go by Stephen Grant sometimes. Like that's just an alias. What he didn't expect to happen is with the powers of Khonshu is just like you've got different phases of the moon. You've got different phases those phases of the moon have actually made him develop this dissociative identity disorder. And so these aliases that he's come up with, like Stephen Grant, are actually now real. It's a real split personality that he's having to deal with. I think it was originally just supposed to be a cover, and now it's like, now it's real. But I could be wrong there. That's just a theory.
Yeah, and the comics aren't exactly clear as to what the truth is as far as whether or not he's actually DID or if these are all just constructions in his brain or what. Each writer has a different take on it, which is kind of fun. It makes it so that it doesn't really matter which way they go, because each one has been established already, and it kind of goes along with how fractured the character is himself.
Yeah, I read a lot of the Garth Ennis stuff, and it's really trippy. I read, you know, some of the Lemire stuff, and yeah, each one's very different. They want to put their own stamp on the character.
I mean, I started with the Houston series, which is like the most grounded, I think, out of all of them. But I really like the Ennis stuff a lot, where it gets more to the Mr. Knight stuff, and it's such fascinating comic book writing, where because it is dealing with mental illness and not knowing your place in the world and all sorts of big ideas.
Yeah. Let's break down some of the things that are happening in this episode. We did talk about the opening scene, but now I want to talk about, you know, we're introduced to Steven, and he knows something's going on. He knows that he knows that he's losing time, but I don't think he knows that he has, does he know that he has DID? I don't think he does.
No
way.
And we see that he's basically in his room. He chains himself. He chains his leg up. It's a combination lock. He's got sand on the floor so he can see footprints if he's trying to get out of the room.
Tape on the door.
He's got tape on the door. He's got, what's wild though is like we see him, you know, in his, he, you know, he listens to like these audio tapes that try to keep him awake. And he's playing with the Rubik's Cube, and when he first wakes up, the Rubik's Cube is completed. So It's so at one point, like, does he flip over to fucking Mark and Mark completes the Rubik's Cube just to fuck with him every day?
I mean, maybe.
Because I think when he goes to sleep, it's still, because it's still not solved. And I think when he wakes up, it's solved every day. And that's gotta, and then we've got the fish. We've got the fish with the fin. I think that's one of the big things. And that's the title of this episode, is the goldfish problem. And we got the fish with the one fin, and then it gets swapped out with the second fin. I think it was a really interesting way to kind of show us what the character does, the lengths the character goes to make sure that he's not out and about and living. Does he think he's sleepwalking? What does he think he's doing?
Yeah.
I think he believes he's just sleepwalking.
Yeah, because when he's talking to that living statue that's credited as Crawley, which is like one of kind of his informants in the books. Mm-hmm. But when he's talking with him, he says something to the effect of, my body needs to get its 10,000 steps in whether I'm awake or not.
Yeah. And you could see why Mark would go through all this trouble, right? It would be to his detriment to have Steven know what was going on and potentially do something that would hinder him being able to do what he has to do. Like, Steven could just go and get the body committed and locked up, and then Mark's just SOL. So you kind of understand why he's keeping the secret. It makes a lot of sense there.
Yeah. Yeah.
And we get that, you know, that the last part of the episode where Mark is talking to him in the mirror, and it seems like that's, you know, the first time that Steven becomes aware fully of Mark's existence and the fact that he's got something else going on besides sleepwalking.
Yeah. We see him.
Yeah, the only reason. Oh, sorry.
No, go for it.
I was going to say, the only reason Mark makes himself aware in the first place is protection of the body. Like, you know, Steven's exactly in control, and if Mark doesn't make himself known, that's going to be the end of everything. So he's just kind of, his hand is forced, and he has to reveal himself.
Yeah.
And there seems to be some questions, too, as to when Mark can take over, because it seemed like he needed permission at the very end, whereas the other times, it seems like he was able to kind of take over at will. So I don't know if that means that Steven has to be in a very weakened mind state for him to be able to do that, or what. That's still not very clear.
Yeah, that is interesting.
He has to be asleep or what?
At the end, he asks for permission, but there is a point in time when they take the scarab from him, and he just, you know, he comes out of it, and he's got the scarab back, and everybody else is down on the ground and bloody. So,
and that physical acting that Oscar Isaac did during that whole scarab trying to hand it over scene was phenomenal. His body is so contorted. I mean, think about him as a human trying, like, having to do this stuff where he's keeping this away but making it look like he's trying to give it to this guy but is unable to. That is some seriously hard work that Oscar Isaac put in to do that.
I think what brought Steven into, like, so we're at that point. Let's talk about that. We're at that point where he wakes up in a field and he's got his jaw dislocated and it looks, looks painful as shit. And
yeah.
I think the fall kind of triggered Steven to come into the picture there. I think, like, the impact, that's what kind of, like, I think Mark gets knocked out and instead of Mark coming back, Steven wakes up. Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah.
I agree 100%. I think that's why Mark takes over, too. It's like Steven is fainting from the crazy stuff going on. I think that's what's allowing Mark to come through earlier. And that lines up with what you're saying, Brian. It's Mark gets knocked out, so Steven is forced to take over. It feels like if you pass out, it kind of flips there.
Somebody else takes over.
And that's what I love when you hear Khonshu say, oh, the idiot's back. You know, I do like the comedy element of Khonshu. Like, you know, and he calls him, he's like, you know, there's a truck over there, stupid. And he's, you know, it just, just constantly berating. He has no respect for Steven. I want to ask you this real quick. We see him calling his mother and leaving her voicemails, and we see these postcards from her on his refrigerator, on his wall and stuff. And I think that I'm with Neil. I don't think his mother exists. I think it's Mark trying to keep up his cover that's, you know, to Steven, to keep Steven think that he's living like leading like this normal life. I think those postcards are the postcards that are in the same gift shop that Mark works at.
Yeah. Yeah, totally. Yeah. I think Mark's listening to those voicemails and it's almost a way for him to keep tabs on what Steven's doing when he's asleep.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Because he's calling and leaving his mom updates on everything going on in his life.
Yeah.
That's a great theory.
Yeah. And so we'll probably get the scene of, hopefully we'll get a scene of like Mark listening to like these voicemails. You know?
And you know, as we got a little bit of Layla, who's a completely new character in this show, finally getting a hold of him and not knowing about his multiple personalities, and like we got allusions to it in the trailer, but then we actually got to see the full kind of conversation here, and it really kind of drove home the point of some people are maybe in on it, but others are definitely not. That like he's kept it a secret for so long from so many people who seem to be intimately involved in his life, yet they don't know what's actually happening with them.
I'm trying to think. I think that... Is Layla in the comics?
No.
Okay.
Not as far as I'm aware.
Oh, people were saying that she was an Layla Miller from the X-Men comics, and that doesn't...
I mean, that's a theory, but
yeah,
I don't
think it is.
She's not like a Moon Knight character.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I just
do you think we'll even see Layla again throughout this series?
I mean, she's what, third billing on IMDb, so I have to imagine she'll be there.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't know. Do you think we'll get Duchamp?
I hope so, because he's a great character, Frenchie.
Yeah.
But I don't know where they're going after this, because Oscar Isaac is only signed up through the end of this series, and I don't know if they know if they're going to do another season or if they want to do movies or what, so I'm not sure exactly how much of the canon characters we're going to get.
I think we will see Frenchie. I think we'll see him in the season. I do think we'll see him. So let's talk about we get introduced to Arthur Harrow, and he's in the town, and he's basically like a cult leader. Everyone there are people lined up to talk with him, and he's going to basically, we see the scales on his arm, the tattoo of the scales, and the scale at the top of the scale, there are crocodile heads, and we actually see like his cane actually has two crocodile heads as well, and it's in Egyptian mythology. Amit had the head of a crocodile, which is the god that he's basically talking about, like the devourer of the dead, Amit, and. What would happen in Egyptian mythology is Anubis would weigh the dead's heart against a feather for Amit and see if they're impure of heart. If they're impure of heart, then Amit would eat them. And Amit had the head of a crocodile, the front legs of a lion, and the back legs of a hippo. And that's at the beginning of the episode. We see Steven talking to the young girl and talking about how they would take out all the organs of, like, you know, before you were mummified, they would take out all the organs except for the heart because you would need that in the afterlife. And that's when Anubis would weigh your heart against a feather. And if your heart was heavy, it was impure, and that's when Amit would eat you. And so these people are getting judged here by Arthur Harrow. He basically the scales, we see the tattoo move. We see the one guy, he's purified. This is a good man. You're a good man. And then the woman who does it, I think that this is fucked up, because I think the guy's probably not a good guy, and the woman was probably pure of heart. She said she'd never done anything wrong in her entire life. And he says, like, this sees your past, present, and future. And so she hadn't done what – like, what is this old woman going to do? Like,
yeah, I think that Amit is skewing the results of the tattoo, you know, like making judgments not based on actual goodness, but – making judgments on who is most helpful to her game,
I agree, because there is a point in the episode later on where Arthur is talking to Steven inside of the museum, and he says that Amit was banished from the earth at one time, and it was the other gods that banished Amit from earth. I have some theories I really would love to talk about, but go ahead.
I was just going to say that I really appreciated how we got our villain reveal right out of the get-go. Unlike most Disney Plus shows where they spend the entire season building up the villain reveal, we actually get it right away. Even though there's some questions about him, we still know who's the antagonist, and like, that is really, really interesting and unusual for Disney Plus Marvel shows.
It's refreshing. Thank God. I'm sick of fucking watching 4, 5, 6 episodes before we finally find out that, you know, this person is the main villain. It's not Mephisto. It's this person.
Yeah, it's not too late for this show to fuck that up. Yeah, episode 4 it could be like, here's the true villain, Howard the Duck. Yeah.
Ethan Hawke was good all along.
Yeah.
He's going to get his own song.
I personally think that with Amit being thrown out of Earth by the gods, I think that Arthur Harrow is wanting to bring Amit back into the world, and that's what the Scarab is going to allow him to do. I think that the Scarab is going to be some kind of thing that is used like
the key from the mummy.
I was thinking more like in the staff in
Raiders of the Lost Ark,
that when the sun hits it, it shows him.
It's the same idea, yeah.
Well, I think the Scarab's going to show where the tomb is located for Amit. And I think that, you know, that Khonshu does not want to bring Amit back into the world, because Khonshu is one of the gods that banished Amit from Earth. And I also... Yeah. Oh, go ahead.
I mean, Khonshu has a very varied history in the MCU, because sometimes he's good and sometimes he's bad. Mm-hmm. And I think that eventually we're going to get some exploration of that idea of Khonshu not always being on the side of the good guys.
Yeah.
Even though in this instance he may be. And I really like that exploration of the gray areas of like, yeah, sometimes this aligns with what is, you know, good, and sometimes it does not. And like, Amit may have been wrong in this one instance, but may have been right in other instances. And exploring that dichotomy of like, yeah, sometimes our heroes are good and sometimes they're not is really a good thing to explore at this point in time.
Yeah.
Yeah, Marvel's a big fan of the gray villain, and I wouldn't be surprised if it's a lot of black and white and everything in between.
Yeah.
Yeah, I really don't think Harrow is tipping the scales in his favor. I really think that elderly woman was a sinner of some kind. I think they've shown his character to be very like into his faith, and I don't know. And it leans towards what you're saying about it being a gray villain. I'm not saying what he's doing is right, but I really do think that that's legit. Like that the guy was innocent and she was by whatever judge it's being judged by. I mean, obviously we don't know the rules.
It's not that Harrow is tipping the scales. It's that whoever is in control of the tattoo maybe.
I think Ahmet, once Ahmet was banished, now Ahmet's trying to come back and definitely trying to align herself with people that she knows that, you know, people of a weaker mind, that, you know, people that get wrapped up in cults.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I think maybe that's something that's going on here. I do have another theory that I want to bust this wide open and present this to you guys. You know, Harrow tells Steven that Ahmet was betrayed by the other gods and even her own avatar. So she had an original avatar at one time. I want to talk about that avatar, who I think it could possibly be, who the original avatar is. But there's a part in this where and it really stood out to me, and I'd like to play this clip. And I think we're about 35 minutes into the episode, and it's Arthur Harrow, and he's talking to Steven. And he's telling Steven some stuff that only Steven would know. And I think I know why he knows this. Let me play this clip.
It's maddening, isn't it? The voice in your head. Relentless. Forever unsatisfied. No matter how hard you try to please, it devours you. So there's nothing left but a hollow shell. And the more you ask for help, the more you begin to sound like the boy who cried wolf. I can't help you. I am trying to help you.
Did you guys catch? Like, he's saying, like, the voice in your head, it will devour you. And I'm trying to help you. The boy who cried wolf, the more you scream, the more people don't believe you, blah, blah, blah. He's talking about the voice that Steven's hearing in his head. I think he knows what Steven's going through because I think that Arthur Harrow at one time was the original avatar for Khonshu. And
it makes sense.
I think just like Ahmet was banished from the gods, Khonshu and Arthur had a falling out, and so now Arthur has aligned himself with his enemy's with his enemy's enemy.
If I can't have you, no one can. Yeah.
And so I think that we're gonna find out that Arthur was the original avatar for Khonshu, and also Ahmet was betrayed by her own avatar and betrayed by the other gods. I don't know about this one, but what if Ahmet's original avatar was Ramatut, aka Kang the Conqueror?
Oh, that's awesome. What a great way to introduce that character.
Mm. Yeah, totally.
Yeah, a different version than we saw in Loki. Yeah, that'd be interesting as fuck.
Yeah, yeah. Mm. I don't know if they'll explore all of that in this first season. I do think that we'll get a second season and movies and all this stuff. Maybe it'll be explored later. Maybe there'll be a post-credit scene. But, I mean, if Ramatut is a version of, like, you know, Nathaniel Richards, Kang the Conqueror, it would kind of connect it a lot more with what's going on in the MCU and what's going on with Loki. And it could also even have connections going forward to
Fantastic Four,
X-Men with Apocalypse. Mm. So, yeah. I mean, there's a lot that they could do. So,
you can't do this much. Oh, sorry, Joe.
I was going to say Apocalypse and Ramatut are two of those characters that I'll be watching for in the background like especially when you get more of the ancient Egypt stuff, to just see if there's some sort of, you know, some sort of imagery in the background that evokes those characters.
Do you think they would try and conflate Apocalypse and Franklin Richards or Nathaniel Richards?
You mean have them as the same character?
Yeah, in order to streamline some of the weirdness in the X-Men comics. Like, would they actually, like, make the first mutant be a time traveler from the future?
That's what I was thinking, but I don't know.
And it would be a neater package than what we've experienced in the comics and the cartoons and whatnot.
Yeah, a lot of it needs to be tightened up.
Yeah. And the MCU is not averse to completely changing character backstories in order to suit streamlining issues. I mean, hell, even creating brand new characters out of nothing, like Arthur Harrow.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, Arthur Harrow, yeah, like you guys were saying, he's like in the comics for one issue, and he was a scientist. He was a scientist, yeah. Not a cult leader, so...
Exactly, like, and he's not important at all in the Moon Knight history. He just happened to exist in one aspect, but now we're actually getting a different version of him that's going to be very strongly explored.
When Arthur says, and he's, you know, looking at the scales, and they just continue to, like, you know, go back and forth.
You have chaos inside you.
And he says, yeah, there's chaos inside you. Is it just a mix of, like, all of his different personalities? You know, maybe some are good and some are bad, and it can't make up its mind. It doesn't know what's going on.
Yeah.
Yeah, it felt like all the personalities was confusing it to the point where it's like it's unfair almost to make a judgment. You know, if you say he's an evil person, it's like unfair to the good personalities.
Yeah, because there is such conflict inside this one human with all these different personalities with this DID that, like, he can't be judged by this black and white judge. Because each one has a completely different ethical code, and it's a fascinating kind of like topic to like think about. And that's one of the things I really appreciate about the show is that it is making us think about these quandaries that we're always in about what is good, what is bad, what is real, what is not. Yeah,
I also just appreciate Marvel's approach to I appreciate their approach to dealing with people with that disorder as well, because, you know, they had the little lines at the end of the show, you know, talking about mental health and all that. And, mm-hmm. and I know that they wanted to make it a point to not just use this whole disorder as a plot device, but also to kind of give it, you know, a little bit of a heart and sympathy as well for what these people actually have to experience.
Yeah, and like the DID is not as big of a thing in the comics from what I've read, but I really appreciate the fact that they're focusing so much of the efforts of the show on it. It really actually makes the character better, I think, to officially recognize him as someone who is suffering from this disorder, and rather than call into question whether he's faking it or not, which has happened multiple times in the comics.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. It was kind of the Bendis Maleev run that really pushed the DID storyline to the forefront. If you guys remember that, I mean, they briefly touched on it in earlier issues, but I mean, that was what his run was all about. And then kind of the runs since then have all had to deal with the repercussions of what Bendis kind of introduced into the world. In that run, he actually thought he was Moon Knight, Spider-Man, Wolverine, and Captain America.
It was a silly run. But, yes, you're right. The subsequent issues of Moon Knight have utilized that as part of the backstory and have pushed it forward more. Whereas, like, anything prior to that was it was more of a gray, like, hey, is this really happening? Is this guy just a fucking asshole who wants to kill people and then blame it on another personality? But I think that it makes a stronger character if he is actually suffering from something that is causing him to miss time and to have multiple personalities.
I want to talk about one of the scenes where he loses time, where I think he did lose time. I don't know if you guys caught this or not, but it's the elevator scene.
Oh yeah.
There's when he first gets into that elevator, he starts smashing the ground floor button. And then we see it open up on an empty third floor. And then it goes down to the second floor. And that's where we see Khonshu coming for him. And then then the old woman gets on the elevator now with him. And she's kind of freaked out by him. And I was thinking she was initially freaked out that he was using a Razor phone and it's the year 2022. But the old woman gets out of the elevator on the fifth floor. It wasn't going up. He had hit that ground button. So he lost time in there.
Yeah.
It shouldn't have. She got off on the fifth floor. It clearly shows the fifth floor. So he lost time on the elevator. He's confused, like, that he's back on the fifth floor because he constantly hit that fucking ground floor button. So he
hit the ground floor button and he got down to the ground floor where she got on. And then he went back up and was confused by the fact that he had gone where he wanted to go, but didn't do anything there.
Okay. Yes. I get now. Okay. Yeah. Cause I thought like, so that second floor scene was with Khonshu, but when she jumps on, she's on the ground floor. Yes. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. All right.
But then he definitely loses time there because he turns around and sees Khonshu in the elevator behind him and then wakes up in panic on the bus.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh God. And that scene of Khonshu like outside on the street
that
was really cool.
Yeah. I love all the little peripheral, visual cues that we get in the show where you kind of see things, but they aren't clear because they're not clear to the character. It just really adds to the whole atmosphere of what we're watching and, how there are things on the very periphery of our vision that we kind of notice but also don't. And as viewers, we get to actually see that thing, and it's weird as shit. It's just a really cool way of kind of getting us into the same mindset as Stephen Grant.
I love the mirrors, and I love all the different reflections that are used throughout the episode. Like we see reflections in mirrors, we see reflections in the water, and we get the reflection at the end where Mark is asking him to let me take over. The part where you know that he's letting Mark take over and you see the bandages being wrapped up over his shoulders and shit. They don't show you the full transformation, but just the beginning of that is awesome. And then the next time we see the jackal, is the jackal supposed to be Anubis?
No.
Okay. So
I think it's a minion of Ahmed.
Okay. Yeah. Because Anubis also has a jackal head. Yeah. Okay. So, oh God, I loved it when you hear the fighting and you see all the porcelain from the sinks and stuff being ripped up. And then you see the jackal being dragged, trying to run out of the room and being dragged back in. Oh, that was very cool. That was fucking so cool. Yeah. I love that.
Yeah.
I could have do for him to punch that jackal about another dozen times.
That's so me too. Me too. Give me more punching. Yes.
The action in this first episode was very sparse, but it was done with such care and conviction. It really, really worked for me, especially on subsequent viewings. It worked better. The first time I watched this episode, I was kind of disappointed I didn't get more Moon Knight beating up people.
Yeah.
But as I've rewatched it, I recognized more of what they were trying to show, and it worked even better multiple times later.
I appreciate it too, Neil. I think that what they did was brilliant, but I am an action fan.
No, I get you. I get
and
you.
So I'm really looking more forward to the Mark Spector episodes that I'm hoping we get with just some crazy action. That's what I'm really looking forward to. Cause like when you, like when you're talking like Fight Club meets Indiana Jones, I want to see a lot more Indiana Jones.
I want to see the fighting of the fight.
Yes.
Club.
Yes. Okay. Go ahead, Tristan.
But I gotta say that I'm a big fan of how this is just such a departure from the standard MCU formula well.
Sure.
So, you know, I'm definitely happy that they're doing something very different.
I think everything that they've done pretty much has been different. Like, WandaVision was super different.
Well, WandaVision, of course. But
I mean, we can say Falcon and Winter Soldier is par for the course for action.
Yeah.
Right. Of course. I think so. I think that you're going to get what you get there. Like, with that, the whole thing was like, who is the power broker? You know, like, that's the big question that we're asking. A question I never want to ask again. but, you know, and Hawkeye was just like, that was street level stuff. And
well, like, I think every MCU Disney Plus show has been completely different in tone.
Yeah, yeah.
And maybe not always subject matter, but definitely different approaches to whatever they're trying to say. And I really appreciate the fact that they are willing to do different things with each different character in order to match that character's tone and not try and shoehorn them anymore into the MCU kind of visual or mental aspects. Like, early on in the MCU, when we were getting like Thor 2 or Avengers 2, they were really trying to streamline everything into being the same thing. And now it seems like they're letting each character kind of do its own thing.
Yeah.
And Moon Knight, especially, is such a weird character who has so many different versions of himself that we're going to get, I think, just a very chaotic show. Because he's such a chaotic character, and it's really exciting to me.
The character really lends himself to be a different thing. I'm really sorry. Tristan, you're right. Like, they are giving us something different here. I hate the way I'm coming off. I'm coming off like... I'm coming off like it's like, man, you know, fucking... That last episode was like really good macaroni and cheese, or that last thing was like really good. And all I want is macaroni and cheese. Just keep giving me macaroni and cheese. It's like, no, sometimes I want something fucking different, you know? And this is definitely something new that
Eat
they're
your
doing.
Vegetables.
Yeah. This is definitely something new. It's definitely something new. I don't know if everyone is going to be sold on this after the first episode though. I think it was very smart that we at least got a little bit of Moon Knight. I think like that is at the very end. I think at the very end, that's the reason like people are going to like, I think Jake alluded to this, like that's the reason people are going to come back for the second episode. We saw fucking Moon Knight.
It's the hook.
Yeah.
Yeah, totally. And if you're not familiar with this character, what a wild sight to see, right? It's not like, not your classic superhero garment. So, but yeah, I can see.
And they said, Jake, they said for years, you can't do the Moon Knight costume live action. It can't be done.
They did such an incredible job with that costume.
Yes.
Holy shit.
The way.
Oh, yeah, the texturing on it and everything. Oh my gosh.
Yeah. The mummy wraps look really impressive. I love how the crescent moon on his chest is also a weapon that we're going to be able to see him use.
Yeah. It's like tied in. Like,
yeah.
You can see, so like it's not the same classic Moon Knight costume from the comics, which is like very clean and white.
Right.
And I love the fact that the MCU is willing to like change aspects of these costumes in order to make them screen worthy, but also keep all the elements that makes them so iconic in the comics. it's a very delicate balancing act. They have done a great fucking job with across the board. I mean, I can't think of a single MCU costume that does not look great.
I'm glad.
Captain America in Avengers 1.
Yes, I was just going to say.
Okay, but it served its function.
Yeah.
I was just going to say that. Man, that costume was absolutely terrible. And I also was not
but his costume in the comics is terrible, so like it bridged that gap.
I was also not a fan, and I might be on the minority here, but I was also not a fan of the gold Iron Man suit in Iron Man 3.
I don't remember that. I refuse to remember Iron Man.
I'm also not a fan of them getting lazy with the suit and making it all CGI. I loved the original.
Yeah,
you could feel the weight of the suit.
Yeah.
The first two movies.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden in Infinity War, it's like he's just basically wearing dots on him.
I know.
Yeah. Once Favreau's influence kind of left, they got a little bit lazy with it.
You could feel the dots. You could feel the dots.
Yeah.
I felt like Downey was just like, I do not want to wear that fucking thing anymore.
Fuck all of you. 100%.
I'm done.
He went his contract. Yeah, he went full fucking Jennifer Lawrence saying, I don't want that goddamn blue makeup. You gotta respect guys like Batista that sit in a chair for 8 hours to get ready to play fucking Drax, you know?
Oh, no kidding.
That is so much work.
Yeah, you gotta respect a guy like Batista. I got a question.
Have any of you guys ever sat in a makeup chair before?
Mm-mm.
No.
It's the worst goddamn thing because you can't move, but you also can't, like read anything. You have to, like, pay, like, all this attention to what the makeup artist is doing, and it is unbearable. Wow. It really is. And I the longest I've ever sat in a makeup chair was, like, 2.5 hours, and my God, that was awful.
Yeah, but and Batista, imagine, like, he's probably showing up at fucking midnight and,
and by 8 a.m., he's ready to go.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh. I think Colin Farrell said this was, like, 4 hours or something like that.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
They finally,
oh, I bet.
They were able, I think, by the second Guardians movie to apply it faster. But
well,
they
developed some new techniques in order to get that specific makeup on him quicker. Because, I mean, the makeup artists don't want to be there that long either.
When you did Without Grace, Brian, did you experience any of this?
No. No.
You're making a joke, Neil.
They had a makeup person there, but I really didn't. It was basically just like a little bit of like a powder that they would apply to my face because you're under like these lamps and everything and these lights and you do start to sweat a little bit. But it was maybe like a 15-minute process for me.
Okay.
I mean, I've gotten old age makeup quite a few times, and it's always a long process, and it sucks.
Listen to this. This is true. When I was an extra on Matt Damon and Steven Soderbergh's The Informant, I was playing an inmate, and it was the scene at the very end of the movie where he's released from jail, and I'm in the yard as one of the prisoners. Well, when I showed up, I like did my hair, did all this stuff. I was the only person they took aside and took into makeup because I looked too good.
Oh, that's funny. You look like a real person rather than an inmate. Okay.
And they were like, no, this is not going to work. We've got to mess you up a little bit. So I went in the trailer and I had to do makeup to fucking make myself look like shit, apparently. So
deprettify your face.
Yeah. Question for you. We're going to be wrapping this up, but I have a question for you. Do you think that we might see any of the Ennead? Is it the Ennead, the nine gods?
Yeah.
Do you think that we're going to see any of the Ennead throughout this series?
No.
It's possible, but you bring up something interesting. I like how Marvel is giving credence to some of these mythical god figures outside of Asgard. It's like all of them kind of exist in their own little realm somewhere in the Marvel universe, you know, including, you know, the gods associated with Black Panther, the gods associated with Asgard. It's like, you know, basically saying that these myths are somewhat true or grounded in truth.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. We're finding out like Norse mythology and stuff like that. And Asgard is real. Yeah. I really like
it. I think we will see them. I don't think they give us this much exposition for nothing. I think in one way or another, we will see them.
I do too. I think they're a big part of the story, Jake, as far as like them betraying Ahmet. And I think that we will get to see all of these gods and kind of like a council of elders kind of thing.
Yeah, they'll come in and like rein in the situation finally, I think possibly.
And we might even see all the different avatars for all the gods as well. Not just Moon Knight. So I'm really interested in seeing that. Go ahead, Neil.
I don't think we're going to get like a scene of all the gods gathered together. I think we're going to continue to get references to this act, but I don't think that we're actually going to get like embodiments of these gods.
Every time I thought that one of these Disney Plus shows was going to stay more grounded, they don't. And so
that's for the Mephisto stuff.
Exactly. That's what I'm saying though. I'm thinking they're going to go all out in this one. Just when you think it's grounded and we're just fucking, we're, you know, they're covering Egyptian mythology and stuff and we're not going to see any of it. I think that they're going to shove it right in our fucking faces. Like Eternals, man, in the Eternals movie, we're looking at Celestials. So, I don't know. I think we will see it. And I have another question for you. Do you think that the time comes for, you know, Thor, Love and Thunder, and we've got Gore the God Butcher going around slaughtering gods. Do you think any of the gods that we might see in this could be some of the victims of Gore the God Butcher in the upcoming Thor and Love and Thunder film?
Ooh. Well, what if that's
that would be really cool.
Yeah, well, what if that's one of the ways that Ahmet's able to get out is that these other gods that help put her away, you know, have been killed by Gore. And so it's really only Khonshu is one of the only ones left.
See, like, I think it's more likely that we see the gods in Thor, Love, and Thunder than in this show.
I think it'd be cool to get a flashback to when she was original, or when Ahmet was originally banished.
I think both is the way to go. I think it adds a lot of weight to Gore if he's murdering people that you're familiar with, that you know. It's not just random CGI image of a god that you're like, oh my god, he's taking down that, you know?
Yeah. I agree.
But is he like an all god butcher or is he a Norse god butcher? Like gods.
All gods, because it's basically none of the gods have been helping anybody.
I mean, is he a comic book character?
Yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. From Jason Aaron's first Thor run.
Okay. Yeah, I'm not familiar with him at all. So that would be really interesting to see like some of the gods beforehand. You're right. In order to establish their presences as like good or bad or what the fuck ever.
Sure. And then like next thing you know, we're seeing Gore take down one of these gods that we saw in this series. Yeah.
Maybe. I mean, I wouldn't put it past Marvel to set that up in this show.
Yeah.
I mean, that's kind of what they do.
Yeah.
They like to set shit up in one thing and then have the payoff be in another thing. So, yeah, I mean, that's
And I think here it works perfectly, too, because, like, if you don't watch Moon Knight, you're still going to get the gist of it. Gore's killing gods. But if you do watch Moon Knight, it just gives it that much more weight.
Yeah.
And, you know, you don't have to do a backstory to this character. You know who's getting murdered.
This god was fun. This god was cool. Oh, shit. Gore killed him. Damn it. <They're dead.
laughs> I'm really looking forward to the second episode. I feel like I hate being the guy that's like giving it a high taste it because I'm just like, oh man.
Well, high taste it's still a good
rating. It's still a good rating.
Jesus Christ.
I know, but I hate being the guy that gives it a high taste it because of just like minor nitpicks of like, I want it to be a little bit more violent. I want to see a little bit more of this and a little bit more of that. I feel like I'm just like that, like I'm a kid in the mall throwing a temper tantrum because I didn't get I didn't get my. They sold out of Turbo Man, and I didn't get my Turbo Man.
Brian. Dude, more often than not, bait and switches really piss me off too. Like that kind of thing just really rubs me the wrong way.
Yeah,
you're not wrong. I mean, they were really pushing, you know, all the quotes. We're not pulling back. It's going to be the most brutal thing we've ever seen in the MCU. Like those quotes are out there. It's not like you were imagining that this was going to be on a certain level.
I feel like they
still
are.
I think it's going to go that way.
I don't. I feel like it could go that way. I don't think so. I feel like they're pulling punches. I think they are pulling their punches. And I think they showed how they were able to pull their punches this episode by him blacking out. I don't think we're going to see fucking Moon Knight just beating somebody so senseless he's got blood all over him and shit. I don't.
Ripping out tones.
I do think we're going to get that. And like, I think that this was a really interesting way of introducing that idea into the MCU, but not showing it right out of the gate.
I think Kevin Feige's fucking definition of, you know, fucking bloody violence and my definition of bloody violence are completely two different things.
We're not talking Psycho Gorman here.
But I take you right back to Walmart Captain America, who freaking almost decapitated someone with a shield. It's like they can do that. You know, they can go. They can possibly go there. I mean,
we've
seen some pretty brutal
shit in the MCU.
Yeah,
and it may have been sanitized a little bit, but I do think we're going to get some visceral, like ultra violence.
Yeah, I was just kind of
at some point.
My violence was what I was comparing it to is I don't think we're going to see anything on the level of what we saw in a Daredevil Netflix series.
I felt like that's
what he was kind of telling us we were going to get more closer to in this Moon Knight series. I don't think we're going to get there.
Well, I don't think we're going to get to that level because now you're comparing PG-13 to TVMA.
Yeah.
But I think it's going to get more graphic.
Yeah, I think it's going to get more graphic. I think we'll actually see real fight scenes. I think they filmed it this way in this first episode just to put us in Steven's shoes.
And you can't also shock people in episode one who, you know, might be watching with little kids. It's almost like you have to kind of give them a warning that this is different.
I watched Optimus Prime die when I was 8 years old.
Yeah, no shit. No shit.
Yeah,
this is a different time back then.
Our childhoods were filled with people dying.
Yeah, Old Yeller, they shot a goddamn dog. They fucking killed a dog.
Yeah, Bambi's mom. Bam!
Dumbo's mom. Dead.
Did Dumbo's mom get killed?
Didn't she die in a fire or some shit?
No, she just got taken away.
I haven't watched Dumbo in fucking 40 years.
They get reunited at the end.
I remember the racist crows.
That song is amazing, though.
Yeah, I hope it gets more violent.
It is a banger, but...
I lean towards Brian. I mean, Disney made a lot of news in the last couple of weeks with kind of putting the Netflix Marvel stuff on here. They have a parental control wall now. You can clearly see what's in front of it and what's behind it. Moon Knight is not behind it so far. It feels weird to me that if it was going to be behind it, they would do it episode by episode. I think they would either deem the entire series behind the wall or in front of it. And as of now, it's in front of it. So I can't really.
But like, because this first episode is strictly from Stephen Grant's perspective, and we're not seeing the ultra-violence of the Moon Knight character in this first episode, it makes sense that they wouldn't have that behind the wall.
I can see him beating the shit out of fucking these Egyptian jackals like they're fucking...
CGI as fuck.
Exactly.
Who gives a shit?
Yeah, but when I fucking go and see the Batman and I see fucking Robert Pattinson punching fucking street thugs fucking 20 times in the face, like... That's a little bit more kind of like what I was gonna, when I think of like Batman pushing that PG-13 rating, it really did, man. The Riddler character, it really pushed. I don't think this is pushing a PG-13 rating as far as it can really be taken.
Not yet.
No, not yet.
I don't think it will. I'm just throwing it. I don't think it will. I really don't.
You guys seem to think it will. I do not. I don't think Kevin Feige.
I agree with you, Brian. I want it to go further.
Yes.
My gut tells me that it's not.
Yeah.
See, I think they're going to do the character justice, and part of the character is this absolute brutality. And so I have to think that they're going to go, they're going to show just how brutal this character can be.
I think Kevin Feige's a cult leader and you're following his bullshit, Neil.
Mark Spector is my cult leader.
I'll tell you what though, if Feige went out of his way to make that whole, you know, no, we're not pulling back, this is Moon Knight statement, and then it's all shit like this episode one, I'm going to be pretty upset.
Yeah, exactly. Like, why would you even talk about it?
I'll talk to you guys in 6 weeks. I'll talk, and we'll talk, and we'll have a powwow about how fucking upset you guys are in 6 weeks.
I'll be real about it. Happy we are. Yeah.
But yeah, I did. I really did enjoy the episode. I'm looking forward to episode two. But that is all I have. Any final thoughts on Moon Knight episode one? The goldfish problem?
Yeah.
No,
this was great. I thought it was funny that we talked about Apocalypse as much as we did in a show starring Oscar Isaac.
Ivan Ooze.
So, yeah, I can't wait for episode two.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to episode two. Yeah, go ahead.
As a fan, like a major fan of the character, I could not be happier than what we got.
All right. Yeah, I'm looking forward to episode two. I can't wait. I really hope that this one, by its completion, I'm hoping I can say, man, that was a Tupperware. I really am hoping.
Completion. All right.
Yeah, we'll see. We'll see. Neil.
I had to slip it in, man.
Speaking of slipping it in, you get five guys on a call and we fucking, oh my God, we get all perverted at the end.
Shit, get the hose.
Oh yeah. All right, guys. I don't know if we're going to be doing bonus episodes for Moon Knight, but I'm sure we will be talking about the second episode, at least in our next episode next week. Everyone, thank you for listening, and we'll see you next week. See ya.
Later, y'all.
Oh fuck, Jake. We got to do plugs. God damn it. Joe, where can people? I feel like a dick. Joe, where can
rewind?
Joe, where can people find you?
Yeah, you can find me on my podcast, Startcast, long form conversations. New episodes every Saturday. You can also find me on Twitter at the Tubby Ninja.
And Neil, where can people find you, sir?
Yeah, you can find me on Smorgasbord, a Star Trek Universe podcast. It's been a little while since we've recorded because of issues, but we're out there. You can find us. It's easy.
I love it when we have the podcasts on, Jake, where they haven't produced content in a while. And then
the last episode we reviewed was not good, so.
Oh no, so it's like you're not in a rush to really get back.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You gotta take the good with the bad. You signed up for this topic.
Yeah, you gotta.
Actually. But no, like, I always love talking to Steven, my co-host, but I work has gotten crazy, and yeah, I just haven't been motivated to watch any more of what we were reviewing at the moment.
All right.
Woo! Join us.
I love the contract that you sign with your listeners. It's like, well, you can't count on us.
Not at all. Not even a little bit.
And then, man, Tristan, you show up here and there, man. You're on our episodes. You've done some Startcast.
Yeah, I guess if I'm going to plug something, it's going to be when someone invites me to do something.
Yeah, there you go. All right, guys. We will see you next week. See you
later.
Thanks for listening to Pop Culture Leftovers. Congratulations. I don't know how you did it. I couldn't do it. You people need a t-shirt saying, I just listened to 2 hours of nonsensical crap. Anyway, if you'd like to reach the Pop Culture Leftovers cast, you can email them at comments@popcultureleftovers.com. You can also follow them on Twitter at PC Leftovers or like their Facebook page. They'd love to hear from you. They're all pretty sad and lonely. One of them is homeless, but I didn't say that.
There's already like 7 million podcasts talking about pop culture and all that. Makes us happy like shooting at a womp rat. But it's all been done before. We don't want to be a copycat. We're the leftovers picking up the scraps. Dropped by the cool kids.
It's a trap.
Good at toss it, good at taste. Do we love it? Hey, let's race it. Can't erase it. Let's embrace the Tupperware party. Subculture spill over like a vulture. Carry over counterculture. Push over pop culture. Leftovers. And we're the uncool kids. What's to say's already been said. Leftovers. Pretty sure that the only talent is the band that's singing this. Pop culture leftovers. Podcasts that are original and good. Have already been done before, so we should separate the wheat from the chaff. And we're the chaff, the crap, even though we're the shit. We're the leftovers picking up the scraps, dropped by the cool kids.
It's a trap.
Good at toss it, good at taste. Do we love it? Hey, let's race it, can't erase it. Let's embrace the Tupperware party. Subculture spill over like a vulture. Carry over counterculture, push over pop culture. Leftovers. And we're the uncool kids. What's to say has already been said. Leftovers. Pretty sure that the only talent is the band that's singing this. Pop culture leftovers. Do we love it? Hey, let's face it, can't erase it. Let's embrace the Tupperware party. Subculture spill over like a vulture. Carry over counterculture, push over pop culture. Leftovers. And with the uncool kids, what's to say has already been said. Leftovers. Pretty sure that the only talent is the band that's singing this. Pop culture leftovers.